Are you a worker that's currently trying to divest your retirement funds? There's so many ways the promise of the encampments can continue to affect how we think about money and institutions. Leave us a comment, and as always, you can find links on divestment and our guests on our website, www.radioproject.org. And that does it for today's show. I'm Salima Hamarani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
Thanks for listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kvoo.fm.
Tune in at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez here on your community radio station, KVOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals, such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m., right here on KBOO Portland.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hello.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month. Typically, we interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Amaru Moon and Haven Wetmore. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
Yeah. So we always like to hear a little bit about just our guest background. So if you could just tell us about your background, your experience in education, what positions you hold, what your roles are as educators.
I can go first. I'm Amaru. I am a para educator at Grant High School. I work with high school students in a special ed classroom. And my background in education, I have kind of been in education off and on for many years. When I was in high school, I did tutoring for elementary school students, practicing math and reading. And then when I was in college, I also volunteered in elementary school. And then in the summers, I did a program called Breakthrough Collaborative, which was a nonprofit where college students designed and taught their own class for summer. And the class that I did was the science of painting, which was really fun. We got to learn how paints were made and made it related to science. And that really got me curious about working directly with students, because it's such a great experience. And then I took some time off from like education. My educational background, like in college, is in psychology and early childhood development. And for a little bit after graduating, I was an in-home care provider. And then years later, once I was focusing on my art, I wanted to change kind of what I was doing for work. And I heard about the paraeducator position. And I was like, well, I don't really know anything about this, but it sounds really relevant to what I've done. And my friend was just like, you should work here, and got started with PPS last year, last school year, and just absolutely love my job and love being able to organize for a job that I feel really passionate about and feel like it is something that will keep me in education for a long time coming forward.
Great. Thanks, Amaru. And Haven?
Yeah, I am actually a substitute teacher, so I'm in the Portland Association of Teachers, but I was a paraeducator in a social-emotional skills classroom for 2 years, working with 5 to 7-year-olds, and I am now, and then I was in a learning center, again, as a paraeducator. And now I am, yeah, a substitute teacher, but still very invested in working with PFSP because I see the necessity of it, as so much of our staff works directly with students.
Great, thank you. And what about any sort of official role within your union? Do either of you have any sort of, hold any sort of office, or you're a building rep or anything like that?
Yeah, I am a site rep at my school. And so I kind of like am a like communication in between like the union office and leadership and then like the rest of my employees. And that kind of goes both ways. I'm also part of the communication action team with Haven. We're both facilitators in that group. So we hold meetings. We plan different events and organize, and it's a rank and file group of dedicated PFSP members. So we're not elected, we're not paid, we volunteer our time, and we work on the newsletter, social media. That's what I mostly work on. We also participate and help organize events related to international solidarity, anti-imperialism, and workers' rights internationally. I made a statement at the board meeting at the start of the strike, kind of voicing a lot of the concerns that PFSP members had. I was also on a panel on December 10th for International Human Rights Day, talking about the human rights violations of PPS and how that relates to PFSP workers. So a lot of what I do is volunteering and helping the rest of the communication action team and the facilitators kind of figure out how we're going to mobilize and how we're going to be connected and how we're going to support the bargaining team and the leadership and what the union is doing, like overall. Like we are, like Haven said a little earlier, like we are not completely separate, but we are our own kind of group of people who are working with the vision of the union for the future.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm also a member of the CAT, the Communication and Action Team. And, you know, the work we do is really about engaging the entire membership to wield the power of the entire bargaining unit of 1400. Yeah, and that's so what Amaru said.
Yeah, great. And then can you tell our listeners a little bit more about just what a para is, what a para typically does, or maybe what a typical day is like for you? Because if you work in a school, you obviously know what a para is, or sometimes they're called education assistants or instructional assistants, but for maybe folks that don't work in schools.
Yeah. I mean, really, a para educator is different at every school and every grade level, even student to student. They're going to have different needs. You're going to be in different environments. We are one of almost 80 job classifications in PFSP. So education assistants are kind of distinct from paraeducators, but, you know, on writing they're distinct, but in practice end up overlapping and doing a lot of the same work, or doing, you know, multiple jobs at the same time. What I do in high school is I work with a class of students under the guidance of a special education teacher. And I basically help make the school accessible for the students. I help them access their education. That can be a variety of things. That can be de-escalation. That can be reinforcing academic things that they've learned in class. That can be, you know, anything also from like toileting to feeding protocols. A lot of students are in wheelchairs and they, you know, need someone to take them to their gen ed classes, like their electives or the classes that they need to take in order to graduate. We also work with a team of occupational therapists, speech language pathologists, behavioral specialists. Like there's a whole team that goes into implementing the IEP. And then we basically are the ones who do the accommodation for the student. So I will be in the class with the students, making sure that their needs are met and that they're able to access education. And we also want to emphasize that it's not just in school. There are paraeducators that ride the bus with students. So they will be, you know, with that student as they go to school and then as they go home. So it's not just in the confines of like the school day. We do a lot of extra unseen work. And again, we are only one of like 80 job classifications in PFSP that do the work, the day-to-day work of having not just special ed students, but all students be able to access their education, access their community.
Thank you so much. And I don't know, Haven, did you want to add to that your own experience?
Yeah, I think that that was really comprehensive, you know, really seeing our work as making our schools accessible for our students, you know?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was a great description. So what are some of the issues that paraeducators have raised about teaching in PPS? What are some of the most pressing issues for rank and file members?
Our bargaining platform is for better pay, safer staffing, and better training. And those are really the issues that we are seeing. PFSP does have many, many, many paraeducators, but we also are a union of about 70 other job classifications, from administrative assistants to bookkeepers to school tech support. So those three things really unite all of us in what we are facing. Our lowest paid members are educational assistants, and they are seeing a lot of the same issues as paras. You know, what we're seeing is that's primary for most paraeducators are these incredibly unsafe work environments. I worked in a classroom that had 7 visits to the emergency room by staff. I have known people who have had to seek emergency medical care due to injuries that could have been prevented by better staffing. This affects teachers and paraeducators and educational assistants, but it also affects our students who are seeing violence and who are experiencing violence. When it's like, really, we could have avoided that situation had we had enough staffing to make sure children's needs were met so they didn't have to escalate to that point. We're also seeing incredibly low pay. EAs start, educational assistants start at $16.66 an hour, I believe. Paraeducators start at $19 an hour. A living wage for one person in Portland is over $21 an hour. And we don't get to work summers. That is an unpaid vacation that we have to find another job for. So over half of our bargaining unit works two jobs. Add that to the fact that many of the people in our union are parents, some single parents, people who are responsible for taking care of other people. So people are going to these incredibly unsafe or unstable or chaotic work environments, depleted, having worked another job, having taken care of their own family, and are expected to then just take the truly terrible working conditions. And so, you know, what paras are facing, what our entire union is facing, really is the safety and security and stability for our students, right? So we see this fight just as much for the paras as we do for the administrative assistants, as we do for the bookkeepers, as we do for the kids. Yeah, and that looks like in our bargaining platform, demanding better pay, demanding living pay, demanding training for how to actually handle these crises, because we're only trained on how to restrain children. The only training given to paraeducators is how do you restrain a child? So really demanding better training and real safety for us, you know? So wanting to move in that direction and seeing a lot of rank and file energy for that.
Yeah, and I think bringing it back to the fact that this is a district, this is a systemic problem. Like, this is not the fault of the job itself, of the students or of any other union. That, like, district will try to pit us against other unions, but the root cause is always with them. Like, they are violating the human rights of these students and the workers that are here to support students in their right for education. And PPS knows what the issues are, and they've had a lot of chances to correct those things, and they refuse. And that's why I think we're seeing a lot of mobilization with our union, because we're realizing that these are decisions made way above our heads by people who don't know anything about what our job is like.
Yes. I started my career in PPS as a para educator, and that was many years ago, and it doesn't sound like things have changed very much in the meantime. And I just think that that point is so important about, these are things that can be avoided with, you know, proper training and with proper staffing, and also, you know, people who can come to work well rested, not having worked a second job, and, you know, be paid accordingly so that they can survive. So thank you for raising those issues up. So PFSP and PPS management are currently in contract negotiations. When did they begin, and where are you on the timeline?
Yeah, we began at like the very end of April. So like the last, just like in the last few, I think it was like April 27th might have been. So we started in the spring. There were multiple meetings with the bargaining team in the district. In that time, as you mentioned, we have rejected two tentative agreements. We are now at the point where on January 17th, there's our first mediation meeting. And so mediation, we get appointed a mediator from the state. So it's no longer just the bargaining team, you know, and PPS. There is a mediator involved. And so there's some like delay with that because of having to get the mediator to be available. And then we're in mediation for a minimum of 15 days, but it could be longer. Then if no agreement is made, then an impasse is declared. And this is like the same process that the teachers went through. So we follow PECBA law, which is a state law. So, you know, it might play out a little bit differently, but we have to follow the same rules as PAT. And then after the impasse, final offers are made within 7 days. Or there's a cooling down period after the final offers. And then we can vote to strike. And that has to be brought to the members and has to be voted on. Or PPS can implement their final offer. They can just say, like, this is what we're doing now. So we're at the point of mediation. And yeah, we're just figuring out what the next steps are. How do we mobilize? And seeing what, you know, PPS, not very hopeful that they're going to be learning from their mistakes or taking accountability. But we shall see.
And you brought up that the bargaining team reached two tentative agreements that were voted down by membership. Can you share what the sticking points were and how that's subsequently played out in bargaining?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the pay increase that they offered, it didn't keep up with inflation. So it really, we would have continued to lose money, which is one of the primary issues of the membership. There was no real substantial change in the training that they offered in that contract. There was no language around safety. And we saw the same thing with the second TA. And so neither of us are on the bargaining team, so we can't speak to how it really played out. But what we do know that they were saying and that they said openly was that PPS was saying, oh, well, you know, you better settle now. You better tentatively agree to this agreement and get your membership on it now. Otherwise, the teachers are going to strike and then they're going to take all your money. And really, we're like pushing people to agree to, frankly, terrible contracts out of fear and trying to make us blame PAT for the poor working conditions they were foisting upon us. And so I think really, you know, struggling against that, but also not compromising, you know, and the membership isn't ready to compromise. You know, I think that there's a lot of fear about taking steps too far among the membership, but it's clear what people want, you know? And so, hoping to move more strongly and more united together in the future.
Great. So question, and it sounds like you are all involved in communication. So I wanted to ask you about communication. How has the bargaining team, the contract action team, leadership been communicating with and engaging members? I understand that there's actually a ground rule that they agreed to for some strange reason that they can't make public statements if they're part of those groups. So how is the communication going?
The CAT started out as the contract action team. That started before bargaining. That was a way to mobilize members and organize and take action around bargaining. The district uses a lot of fear mongering on unions and our unions specifically because we are smaller. We are a lot more spread out than teachers. Sometimes there might be like one or two PFSP members at a certain school. So the PPS use that fear mongering of saying that certain things, you know, they never really gave specifics, but they were planting the seed that like the bargaining team needs to act in a certain way. And then the union representatives need to act in a certain way. We are the communication and action team because we are a rank and file group. We are not elected and we are not paid to do this. And we haven't really changed what we do. We engage members. We are furthering the goal of the entire union. So we're not at odds with the union. We are trying to pivot and continue our organizing and mobilization in a way that's most empowering for our members and that isn't going to cow to the pressure from the district to use fear against us to say like what we can and can't do. We've been focusing a lot on events, on the newsletter that we have every 2 weeks now, which is a really great way of spreading information and highlighting different members within our union. And then we also have started an Instagram page. So we use social media to communicate and to also boost and network with other labor unions and other organizations involved with international solidarity, because we are trying to really educate our members on how everything is connected and how our struggle is connected to so many other struggles. And so we have been, like, we can't speak for the bargaining team or for leadership of the union, but we have been working with the bargaining team and with leadership as rank and file members to really push this momentum. And we're just harnessing the power of the members and show the district that we have power, that we like are not going to just like give in to their tactics. Like, we've seen what they've done with PAT, and we're not going to like fall for that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask just real quickly, and then Rachel, I think, might have another question as well. What sort of impact did the strike, the PAT strike, have on you all? Do you think, did it embolden you? Are people, how do you think it's impacted your bargaining and your members?
Yeah, definitely emboldened people a lot. the district tried to have paraeducators, educational assistants, and library assistants, SCAB as reading coaches, step in, do the work that's typically done by teachers. And that was very upsetting and very frustrating and upsetting for a lot of the members. And then people who were not doing the reading coaching, they were given inconsistent schedules. They were told one day or half day, one day they were full time. They were told to just continue to work full time without knowing what's going to happen with the missed days and how that's going to be made up. And then the district basically changed what they said that their plan would be once the teachers came back. And there was a lot of feelings and a lot of mobilization around that. We did initiate different actions to kind of fight that. And we filed a grievance. We took data, took information about contract violations. We educated our members on how to communicate with the district and with their own supervisors about that. We educated just in general about like what can we do, and took input and brainstormed and met a lot about what can we do about this. So that was really great that we were able to build on the frustrations and actually do something with that, and use that to show the district that we aren't going to turn against PAT and blame them for this. We are going to use it as an opportunity to highlight how PPS is avoiding accountability, and that they're the ones causing this suffering for students and the workers, and just, you know, really make a show of like standing up to those fear tactics. So yeah, we did a lot. There was a lot going on during the strike.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left, and I'd like to take this opportunity to ask you about support PFSP is receiving from other unions, parents, students, and the public, and also how listeners can support you in this fight in the future.
Totally, yeah. I mean, we have gotten incredible support from other unions, from parents, from community members, whether it's showing up to events or engaging, you know, virtually with petitions and social media. We've particularly been building a lot with SEIU 140, which represents custodians and nutrition services at PPS, because we're on the same bargaining timeline. And we've also built connections with local community organizations, such as the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines, and other international solidarity organizations based out of Portland, so that we, and they have shown incredible support for our work as well. So that has been really, really powerful. We recently had a petition to have a just basically handling of the post PAT strike work year implications that got over 1,000 signatures from community members and from people who were just supportive. So that was really powerful. How people can support is really continuing to engage. Like, if you're listening and you're in PFSP, you know, get involved, talk to your work site, DM the PFSP Instagram, right? and really get involved, because it's your voice that matters and it's our power together that's going to make a real difference. We are just going to, yeah, keep deepening our union strength and our capacity to fight for future years. And, you know, follow our social media, which is at PFSP community, right, Amaru?
PFSP underscore community. But if you type in PFSP community, you'll see our logo is a little fist that says one job should be enough.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And if you're in an organization and you want to work together, you know, message that Instagram, and we would love to continue to collaborate and deepen our connection with the community. So, yeah. Do you have stuff to add, Amaru?
No, I think that's great. Just, you know, support us in whatever capacity you have. But as long as you support us, we will get there.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for coming on to the show. It's been really enlightening to hear, and also inspiring to hear your organizing. So thank you for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now.